Oh, I didn't refresh that time. There we go. All right, we all good?
I think so.
All right.
Hopefully you can hear me.
It says
I'm still low on the thing. I'm going to have to talk like right here.
Yeah, I can adjust it at the end. It's all good. But okay. Yeah, man, welcome to episode 85 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. My name is Deion Tibbs, joined by my ace, my best man, my co-host, Dane Beasley. Dane. How are you doing?
What's up? I'm pretty good, man. Pretty great. So we definitely came to an agreement about the 85th episode, about the superlative for today's episode.
Did we? It wasn't Vernon Davis, right?
No, not sweet potato yams. We was gonna go with Ocho Cinco, right?
Okay, Ocho, obviously. Ocho Cinco.
Because I couldn't think of anybody else.
Smart. Okay. The Ocho Cinco episode, and we are joined by our guests, Royden Ogletree of the One Take Pod podcast. Appreciate you hopping on, man. Appreciate you. And man, how's it going this evening?
You know, it's any day that I can come on and talk about sports and movies, the two things that I've dedicated my life to just filling my brain with useless trivia. I think it's a great day. And anytime that I don't have to host a podcast, normally yeah. I'm on the other side asking all the questions and vamping. And
yeah.
It's filled with a lot of uhs and ums.
Yeah,
it's a great day.
Yeah, so yeah, you're in the cool seat. I'm in the hot seat over here. It's not an easy job.
No, everybody thinks when you do a podcast, they're like, oh, you can just talk into a mic and people will get it. First of all, you got to have people listen to you, and second of all, you have to be interesting enough, and second of all, the amount of dead air you have to just fill,
yes.
Because like people yes. like I love my we talk over each other a lot on our podcast. But like the amount of times people will just stop talking, you're just, oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
So were you done? Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But yeah, I've hopped on to the One Take Pod a couple of times to talk. I think the first time was the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And right. Then the other time, what was the second?
Spider-Man. We had like Spider-Man. A 3-hour episode.
On yes, Spider-Man. that was 3 hours, man. But those guys over there are great. Royden, Tej, and our guy Dex does great work over there on the One Take Pod. They break, man, hilarious takes and views on a bunch of movies, like the latest movies, even movies from a while back. So please make sure you check those guys out. I'll put the link to their podcast in the description. Appreciate you again, Royden, for joining us. Of course, I tweeted about the Doctor Strange movie, about airing some grievances, and we'll get to that in our nerdy segment. But it's a lot of sports on deck, man. I'm just really catching up on the day as far as sports news goes. As you guys know, I created a little group chat to let you guys know I'd be late.
This is his way of bragging that he won a championship.
Yeah. He had to find a way to segue that in there, because you know I wasn't going to bring it up. I wasn't going to do it.
I always do. So I held the recording back just a little bit to our viewers and listeners. I had to go win a championship in our
and make a grand entrance, of course.
our 5-on-5 flag football league championship. What's very funny about that, though, and I don't think I told Dane this, is the season started in April, like early April, and the guy that's running it texted me 2 weeks into the season because the team dropped out. Only like I couldn't play anymore, so they dropped out. It was only 4 teams, so they needed a replacement team. One guy on the team stayed, so he's like, "Hey man, could you recruit some people to come?" I was like, you know, school's been crazy. I'm like, do I really want to spend my Thursday nights, like, when I could be relaxing? Do I want to just go out there and, you know, washed up and reliving glory days out there on the field? So I texted a couple people, and we got a team together and won it all. The true Cinderella story here.
Good on you, because the last time that I played flag football, I'm more like a beer league softball guy, where you have to throw it underhanded. And you get points off for like hitting home runs, or like you can't do that.
you can't win.
You have to like pay to hit home runs. But like the last time I played flag football was, I think, in intramural sports at Baylor, and I pulled my hamstring. I played sports all throughout high school. I never pulled a hamstring, done anything. It was the worst. I was like, now I get it. Now I get why those dudes just like don't play. I was sidelined for months.
What's good about this is like I was on a team with two people that play like travel flag football. So they're like in shape, top of the line. I'm good for like maybe 3 or 4 good plays where I'm going 100%. Other than that, it's just the stop and turn around, like, you know what I'm saying?
We need a first down. We need a first down. Go out there, run a button hook, a 3-yard button hook.
It's all the quarterback just the stop route. Just, you know what I'm saying? On the shirt. I'm good for the stops. I hadn't had a
go route in weeks.
I ran one go route today, y'all. One. And that was it.
Just Andre Johnson on the Colts. Just like,
over the middle. You unlocked the memory I forgot that I had. He quit the Texans.
They kind of released him. And then he was like, you know what? I'm going to go to every – he went to the Titans and the Colts. You want to go to the Jaguars for posterity?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Royden, you're a Houston sports fan, right? All Houston.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, y'all been going through it.
It's tough out here.
You got the Astros, but, it's roughing it.
People, you know, it's funny because you have the Astros and obviously like the whole 2017 thing happened. We don't have to talk about it, but like it's fine. But they're still they're still really, really good. But you can't talk about how good they are because everybody's like, boo. And
you're just they'll bring it up.
Yeah. You're just like, this isn't even fun for me anymore. It's fun to troll on Twitter, but like nobody will like share your appreciation for how good your team is. Like the Braves are, the Braves are awesome or whoever is great. And everybody's like, yeah, congratulations. The Astros beat somebody by 5 runs and they're just like, ugh, gross.
Right.
And then we don't even have to talk about the Texans and the Rockets. Like it just.
Yeah, we won't talk about either of those, but we'll start with the NBA playoffs in the semifinals, conference semifinals on each end. And Dane, when you put it in the pod notes, man, I didn't even realize that as we're recording this, the Heat have defeated the Sixers in that series, but all the other series were at 3-2 and the Suns and Mavericks are playing right now. I did not even realize that a lot of back and forth between all the teams that are still left.
Right.
And you had mentioned like which team has the most to lose. And I still been thinking about that since you put it in the notes, bro.
I posed that question because I myself couldn't think of a rational enough or a shady enough way to say, you know what, this team has enough to lose. I was like, surely these two guys will come up with something, but here we are.
Yeah, man. I'll put it like this.
Okay.
When it's just me and you, I constantly brag to you about the Mavericks and you constantly bring me down and
I just let you see the real side of things, man. Yeah. It's not so much bringing you down.
I'm not like a diehard though.
Yeah.
Like
you see flaws in Luka's game essentially.
Well, but if they're losing, I won't watch. Like I can't sit there like
really.
Like, I'm a diehard Broncos fan. I'll watch them if we're losing, if we're down by 4 touchdowns, I'm still sitting at the TV watching.
Quite often.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like the Mavs got blown out the other day, and I turned it off in like third quarter. I'm like, bro, I'm not dealing with this.
Basketball, much like baseball, is kind of a sport where even though you can come back in basketball really relatively better than you can in football or any other sport, it lends itself to being like, I'm not gonna watch us get just like run out of the gym. I can just turn it off. For something about football is like, I need to watch this car crash.
Yes. Hey, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about it, bro, but like they're playing right now and I don't even want to look at the score. But it's interesting though, because if you have all these series that are still left, the Heat just advanced. Yeah. But what the Bucks did yesterday, because I didn't watch that game like, you know, play by play or nothing. But I saw like I put out a tweet about the timeline. Mm-hmm. All I saw on the timeline was Celtics, you know, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. And then like the last 15 minutes, it was Giannis, Drew Holiday. That play Drew Holiday made at the end of the game against Marcus Smart. I guess the defensive player of the year was so ironic, man. And then Marcus Smart flopping. Yes. Hey, that is another thing. And the officiating is one thing.
Right.
But the players obviously are taking advantage of that, right? You'll see like the soccer kind of extra flailing and whatnot. Do you think that'll ever be addressed?
I don't have hope.
I have a thought on that because, and what, like, I'd like to actually go back to the 3-2 or like who has the most to lose, because I think that's an interesting. We'll talk about that in a second, I guess. But like the officiating is funny to me because this year more than any, it's been a huge conversation because one, it's just not been good, but two, it's like they all of a sudden. They had a bunch of rule changes this year, and then all of a sudden they started this year in the playoffs more so than anything else, actually calling like ticky-tack fouls, where as a Rockets fan, I don't know if you remember going back in, like, they would call ticky-tack fouls for James Harden all season for Chris Paul,
and then in the playoffs,
swallow their whistle. And I was so, as a Rockets fan, I mean, everybody goes, well, that's just the playoffs. It's just how it works. And I was like, why? Why? Like, they've called it one way all year. Now, this year, it feels like they almost swallowed their whistles a lot of the times during the regular season. And somebody who's watched all of the NBA can probably check me on this. But this time, it feels like they're calling more and more ticky-tack fouls. Now, the Sixers and the Heat just beat the crap out of each other on live TV just now. So maybe that is null and void. But yeah, you know, you got Chris Paul fouling out. So I don't know what the weird sort of reversal of fortune is there. It just feels like it is a strange flip from where it had been. And I don't know what the thing was. Maybe it was stars not, to the line. I don't know.
Right. And who's the ref I'm thinking of?
Foster.
Yes, Foster. And usually it's the Scott Foster crew, right? Where, you know, when you get a Scott Foster game, you're like, you already know how it's going to go down, especially if Chris Paul is on the court. But it's been every single game almost where there's some type of bad call late, just calls that you wouldn't normally see, like Royden said. And it's kind of interesting. Like, it just started this year, or it feels like during this playoffs where the calls that were usually playoff plays, or, you know what I'm saying, it's just playoff defense, you got to get used to it. It's not happening on the regular.
I saw a stat the other day that blew my mind or something. It was in, I wish I could find it, but somebody stated that Chris Paul has lost, or like fouled out, I can't even remember, like lost like six straight Scott Foster refereed games.
Yeah, wasn't he like
nuts?
I thought I saw 0 for 15.
Was it that big? I thought it was something. It was,
but I think that he just beat. I gotta look that up because I saw something similar to that. I gotta look that up.
Chris Paul, dating back to April 20th, and this was before the last previous game. It said that Chris Paul has lost 14 straight playoff games with Scott Foster.
Yep, as of April 20th. Yeah, that's insane, man.
Boy, that's
at what
wild.
Point you got to be like, nah, man, he can't ref this game. He can't do it.
keep putting him on there, bro. No, that's insane, man.
I don't know if, because the whole thing about the NBA having six fouls is to keep stars in the game, unlike NCAA basketball. So I don't know what the opus is to try and have your stars foul. Like if Giannis fouls out, that's bad for the product. You know what I mean? If Chris Paul fouls out, that's, and he just had a bad game that last game against the or 2 games ago against the Mavericks. But like if Chris Paul fouls out, that's bad for the product. And the NBA is all about product. So I don't know what, like,
and the worst. Is when, if it's not necessarily a foul call or something like missed call or something, where the NBA will come out and make a statement afterwards and say, this play at such and such time should have been a foul call. You know what I'm saying?
Just don't tell me.
Yeah, exactly. Don't tell me that, bro. That's making it worse. But of course, after games, players are subjected to, you know, a press conference. Do you think that would make a difference if the refs had to and have a mic in front of them, like, okay, why'd you make this call here? What were you thinking at this point?
I don't know if that'll do anything. I think it'll serve like the discourse only. You know what I mean? Yeah. And maybe it'll be like a public account and like everybody else has to be held accountable for what they do.
Yeah, I think they got a Twitter page.
Except for referees in any sport. Like they never have to like, and even with the Twitter page, yeah, the NBA ref official Twitter page, or they have one for the NFL and the ML, or actually I don't even think the MLB does. I think people on Twitter just like go off and check it on their own. Like they miss like 18 strike calls or whatever. But I think it may have something to like, it may hold them accountable, but I think all it would do in the end is just serve public discourse on it, because in the end you can't go back and retract what you did. You know what I mean? It would serve for, oh, well, we're not going to have this person ref in the finals if that's what they're seeing. And you have like a recorded statement of like, that's what they're seeing. But I don't think
they do get fined for missed calls, I believe. Right. I think they get some.
I don't know about that. I know every single one of these professional reffing associate, they all have their own union. So that's really why it's like, you can't fire umpire. Like even if you have a bad umpire, you can't fire umpires because they're backed by the union. Like if you have a terrible referee, they're all like basically full-time employees. NCAA refs aren't, but the NBA and all that, that's all like a full-time job pretty much.
So
I don't know what it'll do, but I think it would serve as a good look into what officials are seeing, and then the NBA has to go from there, because everyone else is held accountable for what they're seeing on the, or what happened. Like the owner is probably going to have to come out and make a statement about why the 76ers collapsed tonight. You know, so everyone else has a microphone put, but we've had this weird standard with the referees where it's like, we can't question what they do. We can't question. Yeah. It's a hard job, guys. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you're a ref.
And that's why we need, the best of the best out there making the best calls. But you had mentioned earlier about a team that you feel like Royden has the most to lose in the remaining teams left in the playoffs.
It's the 76ers.
Yeah.
I mean,
and then they're gone.
And they're gone.
Before, and I don't know about how y'all feel about this, but like the 76ers have the most to lose just because people are going to get fired. Doc Rivers is gone. Yeah. Like he was in the huddle. I don't know if y'all, Deontay, you were, catching touchdowns and Randy Moss and people, but like, Dane, I don't know if you were watching the game. There was a sound bite where they cut to the mic'd up thing, and Doc Rivers was in there. He's like, guys, just fight. I need y'all to fight. Everybody come out here and fight. Fight for this. And like, this should have been an asterisk for like, my job
is on the line.
Yeah.
Okay, my bad, Roden. Go ahead.
No, and it really, he's probably gone. Joel Embiid came back from a concussion and a broken orbital bone, like to risk not his career, but risk like other severe injury to just get skunked. And then the whole overwhelming cloud that's hanging over the head is the James Harden contract, max contract that Daryl Morey will for sure offer him. It's going to be close to like $400 million or something nuts like that. And so that's looming over this offseason, and they have no assets. They're all traded to Brooklyn, or Brooklyn has traded whatever, you know, they have no assets. Like Tyrese Maxey's a nice piece. I guess Dybul can like be a nice 3-and-D guy, but it's like, you just have to put all your eggs in the basket that you can ride an off injured Joel Embiid to MVP level, and that Harden won't be fat in the playoffs. Like, it just, like, it, you know, and I've watched it as a Rockets fan. I watched it for a decade. So right. I get it, but it's just, as much as we, I don't know, crap on Harden for his previous runs in the playoffs, at least he looked like he kind of knew or kind of could do something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He just doesn't look like the same player.
Yeah.
And so you're going to offer that guy $400 million. It's probably less than this, more like less like 350, I guess. But, you know, it's a huge max deal. And obviously, like, he'll sign it. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course.
So my whole thing is, like, Philly had the most to lose if they didn't make at least the Eastern Conference Finals. They hadn't made it in 21 years, they said on the broadcast. That's tough for a town that loves the 76ers. They were booing them in the third quarter. It's tough, man. And because the rest of these teams, and we can talk about the rest of them, like, maybe Boston, but, like, Milwaukee has a championship.
Right. My pick was going to be, now that I thought about it a little longer, I'm going to go with the Suns. And by the time this episode's out, they could be in the next round.
Right.
I'm going to just go with the Suns for the fact that you don't know how long you have with Chris Paul. What'd you say, Dane?
Say who they playing?
Okay.
Sorry. I forgot to quit.
You don't know the championship window. You made it to the finals last year. Right. Chris Paul is playing out of his mind, but, I mean, how long do you have him, right? He's, what, 36 now, just turned 37 maybe? I know he just had a birthday. But
I think he's, I mean, I thought he was pushing 40, like, right. Honestly.
Like, and see, you wouldn't know it if, you know, because he's playing top tier. And so how long does that last? You know, he's injury prone. Had a lot of injuries on that team, matter of fact. Devin Booker. So, this is like, I won't say do or die for them, but it's pretty close because, I mean, how long do you have those guys? And Chris Paul is, you know, the leader of that team. Mm-hmm. There's argument about Devin Booker probably being the best player, but that team looks totally different without Chris Paul on the floor. I mean, he's the quarterback of the team, and like, this is like do or die, got to get to the end zone, basically. So, like I said, they might be in the Western Conference Finals by the time this gets on, but I think they have a lot to lose as well.
The thing that I think about the Suns with the Chris Paul thing, and man, I'll never forgive James Harden for running him out of town in favor of Russell Westbrook.
Rockets, everybody.
Terrible, man. And he obviously didn't have a good last season there. He had a bad playoff run, and he looked like he was washed. I mean, he comes back, he changes his diet. I think he's vegetarian now. I don't know what that does for people, but I think it's like less inflammation on old knees or whatever. But I thought he was done. Apparently he wasn't. But the problem is that you are really banking your future on the knees and the hamstrings of a pushing 40 future Hall of Famer, and he's been great doing it, but I don't know without them, like, if he goes, say he gets injured or he retires or whatever, mm-hmm. who's the replacement that replaces him, that Devin Booker can go side by side? Because Devin Booker is an all-star caliber player, and people wanted to talk about the MVP. I don't think he was ever really going to get the MVP this year. I just think he's a guy that scores a lot, can kind of pass the ball a little bit, but he's really just like a main scoring threat. And those guys, without the facilitators and defense and stuff around them, just don't make these deep playoff runs. Like, I don't know if Devin Booker, and I'll probably eat my words in like 20 years when he has like three championships or something like that. But I don't know if those guys end up carrying you after the other pieces kind of leave. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm trying to think of a player to compare him to, but like, I don't, like, it might be wrong. Like Ray Allen, you know what I mean? Like, they made a couple of runs with Milwaukee, with Seattle.
Those complimentary pieces.
Yeah, but he really wasn't he they didn't get to where they needed to be until he was in Boston. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of took a back seat on the Miami Heat teams, but he really didn't get to where he was going in his career. And that's kind of how I feel about Devin Booker. He'll go out there and he'll score you a lot of points. He may get you 5 assists a game, but I don't think, like, if you have a bad Chris Paul game and a decent Devin Booker game, you still lose like they did the other day. Like, yeah, Chris Paul was bad, had 7 turnovers or whatever and fouled out of the game. Like, yeah.
Quadruple single.
And he had those back-to-back bad games too in Dallas. They bounced back against Phoenix. Right now, end of the first, Mavs up 28-25. Heading into the second quarter. I'm not checking the stat line on that, but that's what's going on. The Mavs are up. I don't want to jinx it. I'm not watching it, y'all. I'm not watching it.
What do we feel about the Boston run, too? Because obviously we'll talk about the Marcus Smart thing that was in the notes. I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but like...
No, go ahead, bro.
The Milwaukee, without Chris Middleton, has somehow, and I stopped letting my love for James Harden cloud my judgment of Giannis. Like, I think a lot of people on Twitter are like,
Dex hates Giannis too. Yeah.
So does Teej. A lot of people think he's
Teej too.
A lot of people think he's kind of like a corny dude or whatever.
He's very corny.
He's just a dude on the basketball. He's just good at basketball, man. He just is bigger and better than everybody else. And it's like watching. I saw somebody say, instead of like thinking of Giannis like he's supposed to be this KD type figure, because they're big and long, like, we just need to start thinking of him like he's Shaq.
Yeah.
And how good Shaq was on the Lakers. And how dominant we remember. Yeah, we remember Shaq being. And that's that. I've started looking at him in a completely different light since then. But talking about the teams down 3-2, I don't know if Boston's like in panic mode, because all the, like, Tatum and Brown are still like, what, like 25, 26?
Yep.
But there starts to be a point, unless you get another complimentary piece besides 38-year-old Al Horford, that you kind of got to be like, and they've had this discourse for forever, is this going to work with Tatum? Is Tatum the guy? You know what I mean? And I think he is. I think he's a brilliant basketball player, but it is kind of interesting that we've kind of gone, we're halfway through a boxing match with Tatum and Brown, and it's just kind of like they've been hit a few times and haven't really responded.
Right. I think with Tatum, I mean, we've seen a couple of times where, you know, in crunch time, he's stepped up to that level where he's like, man, I'm that guy, you know, I can be what this team needs, you know, when we get there. I think it's just a matter of, I know they've been in the playoffs a couple of times, so I won't necessarily say experience is the issue. I guess I would say it's more so learning how to win, learning how to finish. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going against right now Milwaukee, the defending champions, who, you know, like you had mentioned with Giannis, probably most people would say the best player in the NBA right now. And you got to just go toe-to-toe with them, like those old school NBA battles that you see back in the day, when the star player steps up, like, you know, it's your time. And I think game 6 is in Milwaukee, right? So that's
I think just won Boston has home court advantage, like down to like the 18th tiebreaker or something I saw the other day, because they had the same record and then it goes down to points and then so on and so forth. But like,
and this is their first year with this coach, and what's his name from the Spurs?
Oh, don't get me lying.
Nia Long's husband.
Yeah,
that's how he's referred to. That's how he's referred to.
That's fine.
I think he's done an incredible job with this team in his first year there. So I feel like you run it back with this team again if they can't get past Milwaukee, just to see, you know, how that runs with a second season under him, but. Yeah, I think these guys still got to figure out how to close out games. They were up, 15 in the last, with like 10 minutes ago?
They were up 15 in the fourth quarter. I do know that.
Yeah, I think I saw 15. But that's what it comes down to, learning how to close out games, especially at home. If you can't do that, you're not ready to go win a championship. But I think this team is good enough to make a finals run. I think it's just mental hurdles right now that they need to address. But I like what they've done so far, like especially this season. I think they're one of the top defensive teams this year, obviously with Marcus Smart. But those last two plays for him,
lost his mind on the court. I hadn't seen anything like that. It was insane. I was stunned watching that, and I tweeted for the Baylor faithful to this podcast. You know, it's like it's Matthew Meyer time.
Yeah,
said Matthew Meyer, and for his entire basketball career. It's been Marcus Smart time, according to Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
Marcus Smart loves thinking he is better than he is Marcus Smart.
And, you know, Dane hates when I bring – not hates, but he always makes fun of me when I bring up Baylor. But, you know, we watch Marcus Smart because, you know, he's from Oklahoma State and he played Baylor twice a year. So, I think he was only there one season though, right?
I thought he was there a long time. It's like one of those players where I thought he may have been there like 4 years.
Okay. I just remember those, you know. Go ahead.
I don't know, because he was an incredible player in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Mound.
Went to Flower Mound. Yes. Yes.
And Low so Mound. I think he was there two seasons. I thought it was one of those things where it's like you hated playing the guy so much that he's like, God, he's still here.
Yeah. Yep. Not like those Kansas players that have like 6 or 7 year scholarships.
30 years of eligibility.
Yeah. Perry Ellis action. The Perry Ellis scholarship.
Who is that? Who is that kid that I swear to God he's working on his doctorate?
There? Morningstar?
The white kid there that he looks like.
Morningstar.
I'm going to look it up. Said he's been there 6 years. I was like, at some point you're running out of like degrees.
Morningstar, Kansas. I think it's him. Brady Morningstar? Or is he? No, that was an old guy. Who was the guy this year?
Somebody's screaming at us, but it. I know. And he looks old too. It is the Perry Ellis.
Mitch Lightfoot.
Mitch Lightfoot was at Kansas when I was in college. I've been out of college for like 8 years.
Yeah, look, here we go. Mitch, his freshman year was 2016-2017.
Okay, maybe not that long, but I graduated.
That's still a long time, and he's coming back, bro. He's coming back.
He just won't go away.
I think I read that. Maybe I'm lying. Anyway, that is Lightfoot.
Marcus Smart had... So you have Jason Tatum, who what I wanted to say was like there was moments this season that it really felt like, oh, this dude's the next Kobe Bryant. It felt like that to me. And people will scoff at that, but he like trained with Kobe and was like Kobe was his mentor and everything. There was times where he would just pull up from the mid range and just dagger shots all season.
Baseline fadeaway. Yeah.
All season, and that's how they got the best record in the East, because he was incredibly clutch all year. And there were some times during these playoffs where it's like the dribble pull-ups, sizing people up. It's so reminiscent of what Kobe Bryant was. Mm-hmm. And there's times you're like, ooh, that's it. So to not get that dude the ball and to like draw, it was nuts. I couldn't believe that final
defensive player of the year.
Yeah. A guy known for his like for his scoring prowess, Marcus Smart.
Yeah. The MVP. Like
Marcus Smart's like a decent basketball player and a decent scorer, but like you're the defensive player of the year, you know what I mean? You're not a scoring champion.
I think that's one of those moments where you outsmart yourself a little bit. I don't know if that was like a coaching call where you know what I'm saying, where you give it to Marcus Smart because hey, they're gonna be doubling Jason Tatum, but it's game five, bro.
It's where getting cute goes wrong.
Yeah, give it to your man that got you there. Right?
Or even Jaylen Brown, your other all-star.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's do that. A dribble up the court, take a look at Jaylen Brown, and they were doing, hey, like you could see him in the corner. They were like, hey, me. And And then to just, and then for him to go, nah, I'm going to try to dribble past Drew Holiday. And back to the reffing thing, they were just like, nope, no whistle. Yeah. And the picture of him going like, ah, like
this. Yeah, the whole flailing.
Doing a jumping jack.
Clean sweep. Clean swipe.
Insane. Just to wave off, you had like 5 seconds left to wave off your two best players and try to dribble it up court. It's like the rule 101 of basketball. The ball moves faster than you can. And so it just is like, it's so crazy that he had two of those. And it's just elite NBA Twitter is when stuff like that happens. And I've loved it since I got into the NBA playoffs years ago. But if Twitter, I'm so glad Twitter exists.
Man, Twitter undefeated as always. But we'll see what progresses tonight and throughout the few days with the playoffs coming up. But yeah, Dane, you have put this in the notes as well, man, about the the last few episodes and over the past few months we've had Jay Billis come on and talk about NIL stuff. We've talked about it a lot, and we were all about get that paper, right? As far as the athletes concerned, and not everybody's really happy about that. I won't say about the paper part, but it some people are saying it's getting out of hand. Mm-hmm. Maybe the NCAA is finally deciding to do something about it. You know, months after it's gone haywire. Right. The president has stepped down or will step down in the near future. And the board of directors has released new NIL guidelines regarding involvement of boosters because it's been crazy. You had Jordan Addison, Pittsburgh receiver, Biletnikoff winner, entering the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
People are chasing that bag, man. So the guys in the suits are cracking down, man. What's going on?
Listen, I personally love a good storyline. I love a good storyline. And nothing makes me smile harder than seeing a situation where there's two siblings that have been in the cut getting away with everything. They finally see the third sibling playing their game and essentially making away with what we can say here is a lot of good cookies. Now they go running to mom and dad because the issue is the third kid is doing the same thing we're doing and we don't like it too much. It's the reason why I love it is because of the chaos factor. I love a good storyline. More than that, it's just we have no idea with these new set of guidelines what that's going to do to the fabric of what we assumed was going to be the wild, wild west. Fortunately for us, we haven't been provided any type of guarantees that this would threaten eligibility of players or anything like that. But this seems like writing on the wall that one, the NCAA has yet again shown us just how unorganized they are, because we should see things like this come out a year ago. It shouldn't be reactive. It should be proactive. But again, we're in this predicament for a reason. But I don't know, man. I have high hopes that this will continue in a good way. But all signs are pointing towards this being just any more chaotic than what it is. So
yeah. Before NCAA, I get to you, bad.
No, you're good. Is the NCAA like the worst run billion-dollar organization on the planet?
Yes, it is.
Has to be, right?
It might be.
It's. I think I talked about it before. It's just like guys just set in their old ways of how things used to be. But as we've seen with like too many things in this world, like things change and for the better, especially with athletes, you know, needing to get paid or whatever. But as far as the boost is concerned, I maybe there needs to be some kind of, we'll say limit, but guys that aren't a part of, well, let me read the article before I, because people are going to be like, what are you talking about, dude? This from ESPN.
Look, I was sitting in my seat, I was like, wait a minute now, you've gone too far, sir.
wait. Let me read this article part first. This from ESPN, Dan Murphy, the NCAA's Division One Board of Directors published new guidelines Monday to clarify that boosters, including recently created companies designed to provide athletes at a particular school with endorsement deals should not have any contact with prospective college athletes, their family members, or their representatives. The guidelines were crafted by a working group of athletic directors and conference commissioners who were tasked earlier this year with reviewing the evolving marketplace for college athletes. The NCAA updated its rules last summer to allow college athletes to make money by selling their rights to their name, image, and likeness. The group's first public response come amid growing concern that some boosters and NIL-focused companies known as collectives are offering monies as incentives to attend a particular school. There's a lot more quotes and stuff about that, but they're trying to crack down on these boosters making moves for, like, what we've seen, the USC's, the Texas's, and those kind of situations. But what I was saying before, mm-hmm. Dane is waiting to hear.
I'm ready to pounce. Yeah.
I see. I believe I'm not in disagreement with players needing to get paid. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm in agreement with you, and then Roy and I asked you about NCAA. We've been saying it over the past few weeks, them being late to the cause, and it's gonna, like, this. I mean, who are they to regulate at this point? Because you're late, and, like, I need to see what are the consequences of said action if this goes through. Like, there's no precedent above. Maybe have the boards deal with it, but I feel like it's too little, too late, right?
It's, the situation is funny to me because, to your point, there, somebody's going to have to pay the price. Somebody's going to be the example. Unfortunately, it has to happen. It's inevitable. We've been waiting so far. A year has gone by, and that hasn't happened yet. But I think with the issuing of these guidelines, if you will, I think that ushers in the ability for them to make a judgment call on who that sacrificial lamb will be. Mm-hmm. My fear is that it's not going to be a big enough program to scare any of your Bamas or your Ohio States or your LSUs. Like, it's not going to be someone big like that. It's going to be your small time school that's just signing big enough players just to make a decent droplet, you know, in the wide ocean that there is called the NIL. It's not going to be something like, exactly. So I don't know, but it doesn't look good. It doesn't look promising, but it's going to bring plenty of storylines and plenty of chaos.
Yeah. What do you think, Royden?
I don't know. I was always worried about the competitive balance. I think players should get paid, and that's a far cry from where I was in college, where, you know, when you're in college, you're an idiot, and you're always, you see the dudes walking around, like, at Baylor, they had just signed with Nike, and so they got all the Baylor swag, they got brand new, you know, not Jordans, they got brand new Nikes, they got brand new sweats, they have the most comfortable clothes, they get fed for free, and then you kind of realize, like, oh, they're up at, like, 5 a.m., running, like, going to, you know, some people you would see them and wouldn't go to class really, but, like, most people are, like, going to class, doing that, going back for another, for study hall, going back for another practice, lifting weights, eating, like, healthy. And it's like a full-time job. So I've come off the thing, and I definitely think that if you are sacrificing your body and your time for a school that is making, for D1 schools, millions of dollars off of you, and, you know, that's kind of the best case scenario. A lot of these teams that say, you know, oh, we don't even break even on athletics, yada yada yada. Your football program still is hauling in millions of dollars, and you should be able to, like, a car company should be able to come up to a local car company in Waco, Texas, should come up to you and be like, hey, we'd like to have you in a commercial. How's, you know, what, you're already at the school, you know what I mean? If you're already at the school, you should be able to go to, drop a name, Blake Chapin, and be like, hey, Blake, we would like you to advertise the newest electric Hummer or whatever it is. You know what I mean? You should be able to do that. There's no reason that you should, because, like, I, in college, can, if I was popular enough, can go do the same thing. It doesn't affect my scholarships that I have. That's so stupid. Right. Like, why? That's really, really backwards that you would think that you shouldn't be able to do that when everyone else has the opportunity to do that. When like YouTube stars are going to college and selling ads for the college they go to on their YouTube channel. You know what I mean?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. So I've come off that a lot. The problem that I kind of have with NIL and that they didn't do a good job of, obviously, because they're having to backtrack now, is that the competitive balance, and it always was shifted because this has always been going on. It just is in the public now and in the open. It is Texas A&M giving Eric Dickerson a gold Trans Am, but it is publicly known now. Right. So it is, or was it a Trans Am or a Firebird? Doesn't matter, but everyone knows the story. And then him just going to SMU. It is in the open.
Yeah.
But my problem is that with that, the competitive balance is publicly uber shifted, because now we can just put together these, it feels like, super PACs or funds to like have a 18-year-old come make $50,000 at our school just right off the bat. You know what I mean? And it incentivizes, I think a lot of players will still like choose the school that is best for them to like, because the end goal is hopefully to go play professional football. So whatever school can get like, but in the meantime, you can take your family a lot of the time, or not a lot of the time, but times are hard right now, sometimes out of poverty, to just immediately go and have the immediate fund of this school. And sometimes it may not even be the best fit for you. That's my problem is that it incentivizes a lot of players to, and it sounds like I'm a hater because I'm a Baylor fan, we keep using Texas, but like it incentivizes a lot of people to go and make a quick decision. And it shifts that competitive balance to the really, really rich schools that throw tons of money into their football programs. So you're going to have schools in the SEC, which most of the SEC schools are rich, and Vanderbilt needs to hop on the train too, because they are richer than everyone. So I don't know why they aren't doing something like this, but you have schools like
they're Vanderbilt. Nobody wants to go there.
Nobody cares. They have way more money than Alabama ever could even dream. But like the thing with that is like, okay, well, you have Alabama, who's obviously going to start throwing money at these players. So what does that mean for like somebody recruiting against you, like name it Kentucky? You know what I mean? Like, who has been competitive in the SEC relatively over the last few years, but, you know, in no way funds their football program. Like, even they fund their basketball program. You know what I mean? Right. And the inverse can say for their basketball program against all the other basketball programs.
Yeah.
It just feels like a weird place where we're at. And I'm glad now that we kind of have some rules as to what can and can't be done, but it is so reactionary by the NCAA. Well, we didn't see this coming. Get out of my face. What are you talking about?
It's like, really,
we
it's
said really, they could get paid, and we didn't think that these weird boosters that care about their college football teams too much were going to come out of the woodwork and their oil jobs and just be like, I heard you want some money. You know what I mean?
It's really college free agency at this point.
Yeah. And I guess I go back and forth because I guess it's fine. Get paid what you're worth for what you think you're worth. We saw like the number one cornerback prospect, like go to Deion Sanders and Jackson State because he got up close to like $1 million to go there from whoever put that together. Probably Barstool, but
it was Barstool.
Yeah. But it, so go make your money. He'll still probably be drafted, but I don't know. It makes a weird conversation about the competitive balance in this, because eventually you're going to have all these super rich schools like one of the biggest brands, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, who spends more money than anyone on college football. All these huge Southern big schools that all of a sudden you're just going to be like, can we even compete with these guys? You know what I mean? And you really couldn't anyway, because Georgia and Alabama have just like been in the championship every year. Clemson will get there occasionally, but it really is a weird can of worms that they have opened without setting any guidelines whatsoever. Right. And I do believe that you're right. They're going to make an example of some poor school that was like, "Oh, we thought that we could pay them."
Well, look at them.
Well,
look at
actually,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think an interesting part about the competitive balance thing where you have schools like, you know, Baylor that, you know, Baylor's Baylor. They don't have, I mean, Mac Rose came out and said that he really wasn't into the big spending part of it, you know, as far as NIL goes. But I feel like you depend now more than ever on like coaches who preach like the culture that they built there. Like with Dave Aranda, I think players are really buying into what he says to them. I think I mentioned this before, Dane, on the previous episode about how that's going to be more important than ever. Like kids who want to, you know, actually come to the school for, you know, the school and not the dollar bill, right? It might be few and far between, but that might be more important now and into the future than ever before. Kids, or, you know, the program itself and the culture and the team oriented atmosphere, playing for one another. Not to say the guys that get money don't care about their teammates, but, you know, you see more of an aspect of them, you know, wanting to go to the school because it's a good fit for them, not because of them getting paid.
And it's a weird transition because, like, you have these things like where you had Quinn Ewers get $1 million to go to Ohio State, and then he never even touched the football field.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just one example, but it's like, what is that? You know, I don't know what that means. You're going to have coaches a lot of the times now too, that will have to actually start keeping their promises because previously in college football, we got a lot of liars in college football. Head coach, I don't know if you've seen college football.
No way.
It just, shocking.
What the hell? This is ridiculous. Like
Urban Meyer? What?
Who has a job now again with Fox, apparently. Great.
Cool. Very cool and normal. But he, you know, you just, not him, but like, you're just going to have coaches that will have to start keeping promises. Otherwise these kids will just go to where they're going to get paid. You know what I mean?
Transfer portal and be gone. Yeah.
It was like, I think they said something about 2,500 players in the portal over the last year, 2 years, some stat. And I was like, that is.
And half of them
crazy.
Don't get picked up. That was the other part of that stat.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, you saw that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It was something maybe even more egregious than that. Maybe like 75% or something like that.
It was something.
Yeah. 24/7 had the article, but there is like an overabundance of transfers of kids thinking, well, I can go somewhere else and get something better. And then they're kind of stuck in purgatory, in limbo, and nobody picks them up because we don't need them. And so, yeah, the problem is you're going to have a lot of kids probably go and commit for money to these places and then may not even ever step foot on the field because all the talent is above you. Now, I think a lot of people still want to play football and they'll go play where they can play. But, it is sort of a interesting thing. And what's also interesting, Deontay, you mentioned about like Baylor, like Vanderbilt or Baylor or any of these other private schools, they don't got to mention at all what they're spending on NIL.
Private, exactly.
They don't have to mention financials at all. We still don't know technically the amount of money Dave Aranda got on an extension. So it doesn't, you know, these private schools, they may even have, the NCAA may even have their hands full with that too, because they have no idea. That?
Right.
Until the tax records come out, and then you got to have somebody comb through that with a fine tooth comb. So, I don't know.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You know what? You've opened another possibility of me just smiling and grinning because of the potential of landing. Just imagine your football program, your Baylor football program, landing 3-4 stars and 2-5 stars that you in your wildest dreams never could imagine, and keeping them. Where that would lead your team, where that would lead your culture of your team in 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And not having anybody to say anything about it. Just think about, I mean, just all logic aside and all, you know, this is wrong and wrong is right.
Since it's Baylor, somebody's gonna talk about how they're cheating. Due to previous stuff, you know, and current Big 12 champs, you know, it'll try to get some snooping going on there, man. I wouldn't be surprised
if Baylor got thrown to the fire if for some reason we got some 5-star quarterback and everybody be like,
wait a minute now.
Jeez. They're paying him directly out of the endowment. Like, you know,
it's gonna be something out of the ordinary, but yeah, we'll see how the NCAA will try to regulate that. And before we get to the schedule release, man, I didn't put this in the notes, and I apologize ahead of time, guys. I forgot about it. It happened earlier this week, but I hate Tom Brady. I hate Tom Brady.
He can't keep getting away with this.
Tom Brady, I tweeted it. Tom Brady is a villain, man. He doesn't want to leave my life. That's how I'm putting it. But
what happened?
For those who don't know, reports are saying that he has agreed to a deal with Fox Sports after he retires for 10 years, $375 million.
Get paid.
With Fox Sports to talk with no experience. I mean, Tony Romo didn't either, but $375 million over 10 years, I can't fathom that. What do y'all think, man? I just think he's a villain.
What I didn't know about that graphic that The Athletic showed is that Jim Rome was still making $30 million a year.
Man, what is he doing? Like, I don't understand.
And people were quote tweeting that. I was like, oh, he had the biggest sports show. It's like, I've never seen anybody tweet a Jim Rome take. Not in a decade.
I haven't seen Jim Rome since ESPN, to be honest.
And like, our good friend Tiege got cooked by him one time.
Did he?
Oh, please!
It was like it was like his own old account, but I think he got like quote tweeted into oblivion by Jim Rome back in the day. But ask him about that on Twitter next time.
I will.
I need to hear this.
But the $375 million, it's like the big number for Tony Romo came after he already had a year with Jim Nance in the booth, and people were like, oh, we really enjoy this. Now that may wear thin for some people or whatever, but like, it was just a better booth than what Jim Nance and Phil Simms had. It just was. Right. It just was a shot in the arm, fresh air, new life, whatever you want to call it. And so they're like, oh, we got to keep this guy around, because there was reports, I believe, of people coming to ESPN trying to poach him and everything else. But he got that after he kind of like proved himself and people enjoyed it. Like Tom Brady.
And I think that's my issue with this. I'm sure a lot of people have said the same thing.
I got you. I got an explanation for
you. It's Tom, right? Go ahead, Dane.
I got you. So boom, you have this guy who's known to be cerebral. Never won a damn thing in his life. I would know. I'm a Cowboys fan. I would know. Okay. Mediocre quarterback, but he very smart, very intelligent, knows how to talk, knows how to command a room, allegedly. Horrible leader. Anyways, you got a guy like this who's never won anything in his life, and he cha-ching cashes out like that for commentating in a sport that he wasn't necessarily never regarded as a top 5, top 10 guy. You have that over here. Then you have over here on the right side, first ballot Hall of Famer, multiple championships a week, the guy that we hate to love, but you know that when he's on TV, great things are going to happen. You see that, you know that there's going to be an audience. They're going to be right behind. Whether you love them or you hate them, you're going to be watching it. I think we see here Fox has an opportunity to capitalize on that while the iron is still hot. We have no idea what his potential would be, but based on his success with commercials, based on his success with award shows, interviews, different little cameos he's had, Tom Brady has been a breath of fresh air. And this is coming from somebody, my team has never beaten Tom Brady. I should hate this guy, but real recognize real. I mean, you're looking at a guy who's taking pay cut, or not pay cut, who's taking team-friendly deal after team-friendly deal after team-friendly deal. And finally, rightfully so, he's getting his due, which I can't hate on. I honestly can't hate on. I can see the rationale behind it, but Tom Brady is going to bring a lot of people to view. And the one thing that they care about more than anything is how many butts are in the seats watching the television, watching the program. Right.
And if you're Fox, you lose your top team with Troy Aikman and Joe Buck going to ESPN Monday Night Football. So this is like a swing for the fences, right? And everything you mentioned, Tom Brady has been a lot more visible, marketing all those things towards the end of his career.
I think that's intentional. You know, it's intentional. He's a hell of a good agent.
Probably for Fox, but the number is just so insane, man. Tom Brady finesse, I think.
Crazy heel turn by him later in his career is like he got to Florida, got some sunshine, got out of the cold, and was like, I'm going to start posting on social media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm going to be a good guy that people like.
And like, I still don't buy it. Like, you're still the dude that terrorized my life for like 40, you know, for 27 years, won every single Super Bowl. Like, you can't keep getting away with it, you know, sort of thing. But like, you know, sometimes I find some of his stuff endearing, but there is a lot of people online and not that are like, I can't stand that guy. Even people think like his TikToks and Twitter trends or whatever is bland and corny. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's some people like it. Like Dan, I see you shaking your head. You you've been fooled. Yeah. I'm not there yet. 375. I can look in the camera and make a TikTok. Nobody's giving me $375 million.
$5 million, right? That's insane.
I'll do that for. I'll do it for half.
Yeah, I think more than anything, and that's the last thing I said. More than anything, it's, you know what, man, I'm just tired of fighting it. Just accept it. I've hated this guy for so long, for 75-80% of my life, because of how much winning he's done. And I think the last few years of my life, I'm like, you know what, man, it is what it is. He's going to be great. I might as well just appreciate it while it's here, even if it is inflated. No pun intended at all.
So once he retires and joins Fox, you have their lead team would be Kevin Burkhardt and Tom. And then for CBS, you got Jim Nance and Tony Romo.
Boy.
ESPN Monday Night Football, you have Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. NBC Sunday Night Football, you have Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth. And then NBC Sunday Night. Oh, yeah, I said that right. And then Amazon for Thursday Night Football is Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit. So it's like an arms race between these studios to sign these guys.
When do they re-up or talk about negotiations with TV contracts again? Because I think that's what this might be building up to. That might be what this is about. This you said it right. This is a big ass arms race. They're like they're trying to get to this part right here, so it's non-negotiable. It's not an issue. There's no type of questions asked when it comes to
because that and the Sunday Ticket deal is up with
DirecTV.
And I think I've heard like Apple TV is trying to get it. There are a couple of companies trying to buy Sunday Ticket. And you probably see a lot of changes to that in the future.
The funniest thing to me about the deal, though, the $375 million after retirement, my guy might not retire. They're just sitting there like, hey, Tom, you want to come do Fox? He's like, yeah, be right there. Let me go throw more touchdowns real quick. I'll be right there. Let me fake retire.
You said that perfectly. It's like, hey, Tom, when you coming through? Like, I'm on my way. You know, you tell somebody on your way.
Haven't even gotten out of the shower yet.
5 minutes out. You know what I'm saying? That's Tom in the NFL. He will never go away.
Yeah.
$375 million. No, thank you. I'm going to go still get my head smashed in by Aaron Donald.
That's how you know retire something up here with Tom is doing? Crazy.
Yeah. That's so stupid. I would retire immediately. 370. You said how much?
What?
That's like baseball player money. You know how they get those ridiculous contracts? Like,
exactly.
It really is. Like, I'm out. Sorry, Tampa. You're gonna have to find Byron Leftwich. You're gonna have to come play quarterback.
Yeah, suit up, bro. For real. The schedule released today, Thursday, May 12th, and kind of like the draft, it's become. And you know, NFL's content, money, dang, we always talk about it. It's a big thing, right? It's a big deal as far as making it prime time and, you know, everybody sitting around the television to talk about it. There was I followed loosely today about it, but there was apparently a Twitter account called, I want to say, NFL Game Leaks that literally trolled on the schedule. I don't know if y'all saw this. Trolled and tweeted fake scheduling games and stuff starting last night, and it grew. The account grew from like 10 followers to 10,000 because people thought it was real. It was so funny. I'll put the link in the little chat, but yeah, schedule release was today. I haven't got a chance to really look at it deep. All I know is my Broncos are heading to Seattle week one, bringing our boy Russ back home. What what's standing out to y'all?
The San Diego Chargers releasing their schedule as an anime.
I'm glad you said that. Good day. Bro, yeah. Go watch it when you get a chance. Go ahead. Take it away.
Incredible. It's incredible. So they released it as like a One Piece or what have you anime, and Attack on Titan was mentioned in there, but they had mentions of every single team. Like they had digs at like Seattle, like RIP to the Legion of Boom. Like they had digs at the Jaguars, where they recreated the photo of Urban Meyer in the bar.
It's amazing.
They had a we play the Browns, and they said our lawyers had us redact this one or whatever. And it just really, on top of that, it looks like it was incredible marketing, and it's gone viral already. It was released like an hour ago. You know, so it was the best one, because then you go and you look at my Texans, and then it just is. It looks, hi, I'm Brandon Cooks, and you're watching Disney Channel, is what it is. I'm serious. Go watch it.
It has like
200. Yeah, it has like 200 retweets. You're like, oh my god, guys, come on. And it's already gone mega viral. But on top of that, it looks like the Chargers. I know you're a Broncos fan. Like, it looks like they have like, the AFC West in general, because they have to play the NFC East, has a good, it's going to be a bloodbath again. You know what I mean? Trying to get to the top of those standings. And it looks like they've set up pretty well to like have a little bit of a comeback here, that just based on the Chargers schedule. The Cowboys look like they have a really tough schedule.
Yeah.
And I know it's based on like competition, like how you did the year before.
Last year's records. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it looks like, man, they got shafted with who they have to play too. They got to play like Green Bay. They got to play Tampa Bay week one. You know, it was last year.
Didn't you play Tampa Bay week one last year?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. I remember that game. They played very well. I watched the video of how the Cowboys schedule was released.
Yeah, I saw that though. I saw that and I was like, yeah, I'm not watching that. And then I was like, let me just watch it. And I was like, okay. I was like, ain't no way they got this clown on here. And sure enough, that's what it was. But I'm glad I watched that first. And then I saw the Chargers video, because the Chargers, like, that shit blew my mind. Like, that was just not only creative, because, you know, speaks to the anime crowd, but also incorporates just how creative some of these social media teams can be, and just the teams in general. But even, you know, you mentioned, Roden, you mentioned the Seattle Seahawks, you know, piece that they did. And in the back, one of the tombstones said, like, RIP to Mina Kimes, is like hopes and dreams and stuff like that. And I was like, bro, like, that is like next, like, it's little stuff like that.
But like the 2001 Mariners season too, like the one they had the best record in baseball. Like, that's tough.
Yeah. So they're getting creative, but it's, the way the Cowboys did it was, you know, it was Jerry Jones, of course, just had to be in there. I was like, dude, like, what are we doing here? You just recovered from like
one Cowboys fan, who?
Mr. Screaming A. Smith.
Screaming A. Stephen A. Smith introducing the Cowboys.
Did he do the video?
Yes, you got to check it out.
You got to check it out. It was legit.
What a burn.
Yeah, it was legit. It was legit, but. Yeah,
that's funny.
We about to get our asses kicked all up and down the field next season. And I'm looking forward to it. Need changes around here. So
I mentioned the leaks. And I saw one video I did see. I don't know if y'all saw the Seattle Seahawks Twitter. You know, since the leaks were going crazy earlier, they did like an 8-minute video where their tight end Will Dillisley is telling people that they have the schedule in the office. He's like, hey, man, we got the schedule in the office, right? And y'all, if y'all want to come see it after practice. And the schedule is full of, like, horrible-ass games. Like, he's like, man, we play in Germany. And then after the Germany game, we have no bye. Like, they're playing in Germany. Yeah. And mm-hmm. tell him they had one of the players, I think it was Diggs. He was like, he called his wife on the phone. He's like, babe, it ain't my fault. I just work here. We play on Thanksgiving and Christmas. Like, and you can hear the wife like, wow, over the phone. But it was all in good fun. And they had one of the other guys act like the NFL scheduling guy calling and tell them about the schedule. But it was all a fun little spoof. But yeah, it seems like the schedule release is just like for content views. You know, people tune in obviously to see. I mean, I don't know if y'all would agree. I think Dane would probably agree. I don't know how Royden feels about it, but I mean, football headlines dominate year round. Like, especially the deals and trades that we saw this offseason. I think I had tweeted this is the most NBA-ish NFL offseason that I've ever seen. The cap doesn't exist, I guess. The big teams just loading up, you know, and every piece of content that an NFL fan can get until late August, early September, they're going to eat it up. So with the draft, you know, there's a lot of stuff around the draft that, you know, people loved. And schedule release, man, where are we playing? Where are we going? What tickets are we needed to buy? What flights we need to buy? So, I mean, I think it's just one of those things that'll continue to, you know, be a big deal and be a, you know, weekly or yearly prime time event. And, yeah, man,
like the NBA is very good at the players, like it being, you know, the meme is we've gone so-and-so days without the NBA being unnecessarily dramatic. Right. But like the NFL, America loves football. Duh. Like it just does. So the NFL there's no one better in any corporation, any entity, maybe Disney is better at like keeping the headlines, but like no one is better than just stepping on whatever headline or anything that you think that you have. Like, oh, nothing's going on today. It's just like some crappy baseball games and the NBA playoffs should be dominating. It's like, schedule release.
Exactly, man. That's a great point. Like,
we're in the day games.
Yeah.
We're in the depths of the playoffs right now. And NFL is just like, here we go.
Years has been the NBA's main thing. It has been, there's no NCAA basketball. Nothing. NCAA football is basically like, even though we're doing bowl games, they're not playing. They said, no, we're not going to do that. NBA is like, we will sacrifice our players to bring you a product, damn it. And NFL is like, say less.
Yep. Pulled down their pants and took a crap all over that idea. Like, bro.
I know some NBA people, NBA like talking heads that were upset about that.
Yeah, rightfully so. But football is king, unfortunately. Just like he said, we'll see where it goes.
And guess what? I'll be watching the Detroit Tigers take on like the Jacksonville Jaguars for sure. I don't care.
Yes, sir. Schedule release. And are you guys ready for our next segment?
It's what I'm here for.
What's that sound?
Nerdy news segment brought to you by
shout out to Keith.
I don't think we've ever had a guest on when I played the nerd segment, have we?
We don't want to scare anybody away.
That was hard. What are we talking about? We've never had any, like, we don't have any transition. We literally is just me in post being like, I'll edit that later. Like, you go watch our YouTube, if you go watch our YouTube channel, like, we get up and go to the restroom and like grab beer and
stuff. I loved it, man.
It's
I love
blank
it.
Screen of us just walking out into our living rooms.
Yeah, that's our boy Keith that helps us out with we have a bunch of different sounds that he's made for us for our podcast.
Incredible. Way to go, Keith.
He's great. Yeah, he's into the music, bro. But yeah, obviously this segment is going to be all about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness that released on last Friday. And yes, we're all doing our sling ring action. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness It was madness. We were in the multiverse. There were a lot of this seemed like a divided movie from what I've seen from, of course, critics as well as the casual fan. One of the main arguments that I've seen, and I'm going to briefly talk about it and then kick it to you guys, was a spoiler alert.
Yeah.
If you don't know by now,
this movie has made $500 million. If you haven't seen it by now, man, yeah. Come on.
And why are you listening if you haven't right. seen it?
Not that important.
One of the arguments that I've seen, which I don't know how to really say it or describe it, is more this movie being about this should have been called Doctor Strange and Wanda in the Multiverse of Madness, which, yes, Wanda was a great and Elizabeth Olsen played that role. Like, she knocked it out the park. And she, you know, you were scared of her. I was scared of her. Karina was pinching me throughout the entire movie, the way Sam Raimi made it his movie, but we'll get to that in a second. But the main argument that I saw was, as far as Wanda becoming the villain in this movie, it seems like people forgot what happened at the end of WandaVision. Mm-hmm. She did take over the whole town. She did apologize or whatever. And, you know, I've done wrong. But at the end of, you know, the end credit scene, I believe it was the end credit scene, we see her being, you know, the beginning of the corruption, reading and trying to understand the Darkhold to go back to get her kids. And, you know, some people say that's justified, but I think that part is being missed by a lot of people who say that all of her bad things that happened to her, she redeemed herself at the end of WandaVision. Where do y'all sit with that as far as her becoming the villain in this movie? I feel like the trailers were obviously leaning towards that anyway, but how do y'all feel about that?
If you hadn't seen WandaVision, which I got in an argument with people online, not really an argument. It was kind of me yelling at clouds, but like it was, if you hadn't seen WandaVision, which a billion people watched that show. So I don't know who the critics were talking about that had said like, oh, you got to watch all these other properties. Well, like a lot of people watch those properties. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, man, you got to watch the MASH TV show to know what's going on in MASH. You know what I mean? Like, right. That many people watch that TV show. It was huge. But, like, it does feel like an underdeveloped character, even though we got a big TV show with her.
Mm-hmm.
In the movies, in the mainstream movies, it does almost feel like a little bit of an underdeveloped character. To like, if you've only watched the movies, do like a heel turn all of a sudden. But if you watch WandaVision, like that, the argument's kind of null and void. So I don't know where I don't know where I really stand on that. I enjoyed it. I thought it was awesome. I thought she was one of the best villains. Like, Marvel has a serious villain problem. They always have in all of these movies outside of Thanos and like Loki, I think. But it really, was an incredible turn for her. Now, if that turn was justified, I don't know. There's been a lot of talk about this movie about it having a terrible the crazy woman problem, where it's like a woman has lost her mind because she can't, like, her motherhood is in question and stuff like that, right. Which is a trope that we've seen in movies for a millennia. So, right. I've heard that argument. I didn't necessarily feel that way, but it's not for me to say. I thought it was a great turn. If you hadn't paid attention to previous plot, then maybe, but that's how I feel about it.
I didn't have any particular issues. More than anything, I was just excited just to see her get the opportunity on the big screen, the character fleshed out with layers. So many times in the past, we've had these throwaway villains that we really didn't get the opportunity to, you know what, I kind of see where they're coming from. That's a good point. I like that villain. We never got that type of opportunity with some of the villains in Marvel, which they more than anything redeem themselves. Now, it's up to the interpretation of the viewer and just the ability to not follow or fall in the trap of hating something just because everyone else hates it. That's another big thing that we see off way too often, especially with comic book adaptations, where people fall victim to groupthink in terms of hating something just because of everyone else is hating it. But if you're going in there with the mindset of, you know, just being yourself or just thinking for yourself, you shouldn't have any problems taking away or coming up with your own theory or about the character. But man, the woman lost everything. Mm-hmm. And she lost everything once. Well, losing everything once is bad enough. She lost everything twice. So it's like, I can't sit here and say justify, I understand, but I appreciate what she went through, the character, because it made that movie just that much better. Just the total ass kicking that she was doing.
And then Kevin Feige.
My problems with the movie aren't with the character of Wanda. Yeah. I'll say that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Kevin Feige, I know Rory had mentioned about the show aspect, and you know a lot of people watch WandaVision. It was the first Disney Plus show, correct? Or yeah. Marvel one.
Yep.
And so that was kind of one of the main draws to it, right? It's like how are they gonna bring these characters to the, you know, quote unquote television screen? I mean, it still felt like a movie in the way they shot it. Mm-hmm. But one of the things Kevin Feige said when they announced like what Disney Plus was gonna be about as far as Marvel is concerned is using that time to flesh out characters that you won't have time for in the movies, right? And so I think that was something we learned with Wanda. With everything that she went through in Infinity War, or even before Infinity War, and Age of Ultron, Infinity War, Endgame, and then her having to deal with all that, you know, emotional toll, and you know the outcome of that and how that would be like, mm-hmm. it all didn't get solved in WandaVision. At least we thought it did at first with her, you know, talking to Monica Rambeau, mm-hmm. And her like, okay, I know I got problems to deal with. And then we see at the end, all right, she's about to go Scarlet Witch, or she is the Scarlet Witch, and she's about to do Scarlet Witch like things, which we saw in the movie.
Right.
But yeah, she stole the show, man. Obviously, like you felt like, she was, you know, intimidating. She brought the presence on the screen. Mm-hmm. And as far as Doctor Strange goes, and you know Benedict Cumberbatch, he Dan, you had tweeted, or did you send it to me in a text message about was it today, the scene after Rachel McAdams' wedding, Christine's wedding, when off the balcony with the bro. You know, when the monster comes through with America Chavez,
coldest shit,
that
bro.
Is the coldest, you know, we talk shit. About Iron Man suit ups over the years, right?
Yeah, the nanotech
that
suit
Dr.
up.
Strange.
He shat. He royally shat all over it. Any of your favorite comic book heroes transformations, like that was. Obviously, we know the brother was clean before he became a superhero. Like the damn car he was driving cost more than probably half the houses on my block. But
you know how much that watch she gave him goes for? Dex looked this up for us the other day on the podcast.
Okay.
$20,000.
There you go.
That watch is more than my salary. No, it's like 20 grand.
That's not I paid for my car. So that just further, you know, further puts it in perspective. He's a smooth criminal, bro. Like that was hella swaggy. But back to your point, but he hella cool. Hella cool.
That was probably one of the dopest, like, there's some incredible moments in MCU, obviously, but I enjoyed that moment, like, just flawless. I think that's the perfect way to describe it, flawless.
Buddy downed the drink. He didn't even have the audacity to throw it on the ground. He was like, you know what? I'm cool for this shit. I'm putting it on the table. He put it on the table, bro. How sophisticated of a person do you have to be to drink, sit on the table, float down, like. Yeah, my bad. Go ahead, man. Yeah. I'm gonna stop interrupting you. Go ahead, man.
Nah, you good. You good. Of course, when Scott Derrickson decided him and Marvel split ways on directing this film, it was first titled as, I think at one of the expos, Kevin Feige said it would be Marvel's first horror movie. Film. I don't know if you guys remember that. So when he left the project, it was kind of disappointing as far as, okay, what are they doing? Like, are they still deciding to go this route? And then they bring in Sam Raimi, and people's hopes are still high as far as what he did with, you know, the Spider-Man trilogy. Mm-hmm. But there were moments in this film, and I'll kick it to y'all again, where, like, I didn't feel scared, obviously, but, like, it was tense, right? I think the best part of it were the parts in the film where the music, the score just cut off, and it's just silence. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, that brought in the intensity of it. That brought in, you know, the jump scares that were in the movie. That brought in the tense feeling, like, you know what I'm saying, clutching your pearls kind of action. I think those moments that were, you know, sprinkled throughout the film kind of added to, you know, the horror aspect of it. And this, mm-hmm. I mean, I think you could still label it as a horror film or horror elements. Because the MCU has never gone into some of the stuff that we saw in this film, what Wanda did to the 838 Illuminati, I did not see coming. It was gasp, like, throughout the whole, you know, it's cheers for, you know, John Krasinski, Black Bolt, you know, all these characters, right? And, you know, to see them gone just like that. Everybody's like, oh, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was intense.
Swiss cheese. That was insane.
Bro.
Yeah, man.
Surely she's not going to kill, buddy. And I was like, oh, damn, she killed him. Okay, cool. Well, that's what we're doing. All right, I'm in.
Yeah. Deontay, you talked about the horror elements, and like, if the listeners don't know the story behind this, the Scott Derrickson thing, he directed the first Doctor Strange, and he's known for making sort of these lower budget or mid budget horror movies. And that's kind of what Marvel has started to do, is started to get these genre filmmakers, and a lot of good filmmakers have gone on now to make horror movies, because it's movies that you can make for cheap and get a good return on investment. Shout out to Blumhouse. So that's where they've found some of these dudes. Scott Derrickson, I don't know about y'all, I'm really interested in looking up The Black Phone, or watching The Black Phone whenever that comes out, with Ethan Hawke. But anyway, he leaves the project. Sam Raimi comes on kind of like last second, and then they still go, oh, well, you're still going to make like a horror film. And there's a lot of Sam Raimi in this. My biggest complaint that I had with the film on our show was that while there was a ton of Sam Raimi elements there, it felt like 2/3 Sam Raimi, 1/3 Marvel BS, which a lot of, you know, take it for what it's worth. But like, I thought some of the CGI in the very beginning was bad. Like, not, and I'm going to come out sounding like a hater on this podcast.
I'm thinking of a particular scene or a part of that early battle. I don't know if it was either Strange or Wong being clutched by, it's a Gargantos or whatever monster that she summoned. Mm-hmm. There was some weird parts of that I saw, but like, for me, and I know you guys watch, or Royden on your podcast, you guys dive into movies really deep as far as special effects and stuff like that. Me as a, I'm not really good at pointing that out, so I'm interested to see what you say.
If you're not looking for it, like, and I'm not great about it either, but like, it is one of those things where, like, when you see it, you kind of know what it is. Yeah. In comparative to the other Doctor Strange film, which came out in 2014, mm-hmm. which had at the time some of the most incredible CGI that I ever filmed, it felt, if you just compare films, it felt the first few scenes like worse than that. And I'm not saying this is a bad movie because they had a bad start. You know what I mean? It's still a very entertaining, well done genre film horror movie. And but it's just based in the MCU. So it felt like that front third was something that Marvel had kind of sketched out, and they were like, we got to do this. We got to have a big monster fight sort of thing. Yeah. And they have a couple of them. And the first chase scene in the very beginning, that big spaghetti monster thing that they fight, mm-hmm. In the very, very beginning, in the first scene, doesn't really look good. I'm not quite sure the octopus thing looks that great. And you just kind of go back and you look at film, like, and you look at stuff back in 2014, and it looks the same, if not worse. And that's just kind of how I compared it. And that's how it looked like that. But then it start once she, after she attacks Carmitage and gets inside Carmitage, like that whole fight between where she's trying to break in doesn't necessarily even look that great either. But when she gets into Carmitage and she's trapped in like the mirror dimension and everything, and she's like, that's when it feels like Sam Raimi was like, all right, now I get to cook. And from then on, he's cooking the entire time. He's cooking with grease the entire time. And then, but before that, it's like, what? There's a moment when I was watching, I was like, okay, where are we going? What, how long is this going to, you know?
Yeah.
And it's only a 2-hour movie. Right, but there was a moment when I was watching it, I was like, is this a horror movie? I was told this is supposed to be a horror movie. And then it eventually goes, and it's some of the most brutal stuff that you'll ever see in a Marvel movie. Yep. So if you're worried about taking your kids, like maybe, I would suggest if your kid's under like 11, 10 or 11, like maybe don't take them to this movie. It's kind of scary. There's parts of, it's basically like a stalker chase film, like a Michael Myers type of film. He's like basically chasing them. She's basically chasing them through multiverses for the entire movie, and she's always one step behind. There's even that whole scene before she destroys the Illuminati where she is like, you don't even see her for half the time. She's basically like prowling the entire time to get to him, and then chases him through like the street or the pipes or whatever. And it feels like an old school Jason, Michael Myers horror.
That was one of those moments where they cut the score and it's just like you just hear pipes and water dripping.
Yeah, and I mentioned this too. Danny Elfman. No, Danny Elfman did the score, and you know he's famous for doing the Raimi Spider-Man score that everybody knows and loves. And so even then the score was completely different from anything in a Marvel. This was just a different Marvel movie. Some people may like that. Some people may not. My problems with it aren't that it was different or anything like that. And the score too, like where like the acid rock guitar where she's like concentrating and all of that stuff. It was a completely different experience. So that may turn people off. I understand my co-hosts were kind of more critical of that. I'm kind of we've been having our Marvel thing, doing the Marvel thing. And like, I understand like some audiences will be like, I don't know about that one, but like I enjoyed it for what they've started to do with these movies is when you stop thinking about them as this sort of like overarching thing, and that's tough because we've all of these things are supposed to be connected, and that's what they told us. If you start thinking of them more as independent genre films that connect, kind of,
yeah,
and then it starts to like make these a little bit more palatable.
Yeah, and then like the genre aspect for sure. Like you got projects like Moon Knight that just finished. Like I mean, it was kind of not horror aspect, but just more gritty and down to earth, like you know how dark, I guess the word I'm looking for is more of a dark kind of sense. And you got projects like Blade that's coming up from Marvel Studios in the future. So I think it was kind of like the introduction to, you know, like you mentioned, Roy, in that genre aspect of the MCU, like they're really flirting with. But the cameos, man, what'd you think, Dane? We got of course we had 838 Mordo, not and I'm interested to see where the other Mordo is. I thought he would pop up because we left him in the first Doctor Strange movie, you know, turning heel and becoming a villain, so to speak. So we get the new Tyler Perry wig Mordo with the braids coming down, and you got of course Professor X from the X-Men Fox movies.
Speaking of the John... theme, did y'all hear the X-Men
yes.
cartoon yeah. theme?
Man, what'd you think of Captain Carter? John Krasinski playing Reed Richards.
So I appreciated the hell out of just the fan service. You can do a lot of things wrong, from execution, pacing, visual effects, of course. But when you pay out on that fan service with castings like that, and just having people on the film, that, you know, speculation is everywhere. So speculation is everything. But when you have so much social media, gives you so much access, whether it's to leaks, press reviews, different red carpet events, it gives you so many different point of views. But when you actually get to the theater and you're actually seeing it, and you're, you know, 75% in the movie, and you're like, oh wait, you see something pay off. It's just a special place for me, especially just because we grew up on X-Men, you know, and to finally see it paying off was huge. Not even just the fact of how they might have executed from the source material. It really doesn't even matter. It's just seeing it actually there. Like, we're here. It took this long. You know, we started this journey, what, back, you know, with your Captain America, your Incredible Hulk, with, you know, Iron Man. And now we're finally here. We can possibly get an invitation with the mutants. So that was huge. And then, of course, with Captain Carter and then just a few other elements of the movie, it provided us the ability to breathe and just be grateful that what if in some shape or fashion, whether it's the universe that we saw the cartoon in, is being utilized and those characters are being not introduced, but we see them there. So that was cool. I think what I appreciated, you brought it up, so I have to, you know, get to it. The issue that I have is the allocation of resources. This is a $1 billion engine we have here, much like the NCAA and the NFL. These are $1 billion entities. Why the hell are these wigs and these lace fronts so bad? Like, you can see when Wanda is looking like this, it looks fine. But as soon as she turns her head, you can see how long her head is. I'm like, you guys have so much freaking money. Yeah. How is it that this wig is sitting on her head like a fucking helmet?
They did. Doctor Strange's bad, man.
Then Doctor Strange's, it just, like, you can see his, I mean, ponytail Strange wasn't so bad, but they had so many close-up shots of Strange, like, our version of Strange, like, and it just looked bad. And then to top it off, Mordo's dreadlock cornrow wig was just like, it was Tyler Perry.
Yeah, I know what that was.
So I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Like, what are we doing here? Like, you got this doesn't make any sense. But I don't know. That was one of the major gripes I had, just because it's aesthetically, it was annoying the hell out of me. Every scene, I'm like, why are we doing this? What are we doing? Anyways.
Yeah. We talked about that on our podcast with Dex and Teej went off on how bad my guy's hair looked, and I was just kind of like, you know what, I didn't even notice, but I, like,
yeah,
going back and looking at it, you're like yeah, that's not great. That's not great.
Shamar Moore, Tyler Perry,
yeah, man,
braided wig. Another I guess convenient kind of thing, it's a small gripe, it's a particular scene, mm-hmm. where, and this is very small, y'all,
go ahead, man.
when Strange and Mordo were fighting in the little Illuminati area or whatever,
a weird break from like everything else that was happening.
Yes,
right? Like that, yeah, the break was like, because, you know, you cut to the scene and then Charles pops up right next to Wanda all of a sudden. But the part that I was like, really? Like, they fight and they fall down in this little pit. But before that, you see, maybe before they hit the pit, you see Mordo use like the magic boots or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's like low key, like off the ground, flying in the boots. And then him and Strange fight. And Strange gets out. And Mordo's stuck down there, bro. Like, you just used the boots like 5 minutes ago. Can't you just like.
They had to recharge, bro.
You know, you can get out of that hole. You there for plot, right? Yeah. Right. You're there for plot.
And even if he got out, it wouldn't have mattered. It was a weird beat that we didn't talk about this on the podcast, and I'm mentally bringing it. It was a weird beat. They're like, all right, we're going to have them fight. Okay. And then it doesn't really even matter. It basically just, it like,
it what purpose does it serve? Vote. What purpose does it serve?
Yeah.
You could have easily just, it was just another fight. Like, you could have easily just had them let him out. You know what I mean? Yeah. So,
what was I going to say? Dang, I forgot. But oh no, what his quote was like something like, I made my vote. I was like, oh, he finna free him.
Yeah.
And then he just started
beating his ass.
he really, they're really about to fight. Okay.
Yeah. It didn't make any sense, that sort of beat in the movie. Talking about the cameos though, you talked about the fan service of John Krasinski, which is really crazy, because this more so than anything, I think the other thing was like, maybe Tom Cruise will do it. And they asked, and I think he like had scheduling stuff. So like they couldn't get him in there, which would have been insane.
The Tony Stark.
But is this,
because like obviously Tony Stark before, my bad to cut you off, because they got the Ultron bots there. Yeah. So, I mean, you can assume maybe Reed Richards made it, but I think, to me, I think that's Iron Man making those at some point in this universe.
For those that don't know, that Tom Cruise was supposed to be Iron Man, like the studio wanted it and everything, but like they went in a different direction because Robert Downey Jr. just tested so well and it fit the character, what they wanted to do more. But so that would have been insane. And the writer said that he asked Kevin Feige if they could do it, and I don't think they could make it work. But the Reed Richards thing is crazy, because that started as like some dude on Twitter like shared a Photoshop photo and was like, wouldn't this be crazy? And it just went viral. Like, and then and that was like 4 years ago. Yeah. And and then Kevin Feige was like, you know what? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. Like, that's the whole thing. It is so crazy to me. And I was stunned by that. I was sitting there in the theater and I was like, I'm not often stunned by like stunt casting, but I was like, it was one of those ones where I was like, I can't believe they actually did it.
Yeah.
Right. Now I got a question for y'all. So we've seen now the introduction of variants through, you know, the multiverse through Loki, through Spider-Man No Way Home with Multiverse of Madness, right? Mm-hmm. And on both, well, to me, it seems like they've kind of learned the audience to where we can see variants that look just like their other universe counterparts, with the Doctor Stranges, the Mortos, right? Spider-Man No Way Home, we've seen variants that don't look alike with the Peter Parkers, Spider-Man.
Okay.
Now, we all liked the John Krasinski, Reed Richards cameo.
Okay.
We saw he was, you know, he died, right, in this movie.
Okay.
Will we see him again, John Krasinski, Reed Richards? Or do you think they'll recast a new one as a variant? Because we've seen, you know, they've taught us that, you know, it could be one that looks like the one we've seen, or a completely different version.
I think this was a canary in the coal mine situation, where it was like, if they came out and everybody's like, what the hell? Ew. Like, if that was a thing and everybody was like, no, absolutely not, then maybe Kevin Feige goes in a different direction. But if you remember, the Fantastic Four movie was announced and the director, John Watts, stepped down from that movie. And so the thought is that he, being Krasinski, will come and direct that movie and star in it. And that's something that he's like expressed interest, I believe, in the past of wanting to do. And so that may be the only reason that they get him in there, because it's not like he's hurting for work or anything. I think he's pretty much like, but they'll throw $1 billion at him and now he's stuck in the MCU for 20 years. I believe that they'll continue on with it. It wouldn't hurt my feelings one way or another if he didn't come back. I think it was a funny wink wink to the audience that Feige did in this movie. I think it would be weird kind of if they didn't bring him back.
Yeah.
What I want to know is
confusing, if probably
Yeah, and what I want to know is if they'll have his wife, Emily Blunt, be Sue Storm.
Because that was another fan-casted thing as well, right?
So that's what I'm more interested in, is see if she'll come along for the ride as well. Because I would really enjoy just having those two on screen, because I don't... We got them on screen in A Quiet Place, and that was a couple of really great, brilliantly directed movies.
And he directed that,
He directed both of them, yeah. And so I enjoyed both those movies. I think he would do incredible with the budget that they give him. But I would like to see him back, and I would be shocked if they didn't do it.
Right. To be completely honest. At this point, Marvel is with the content, bro, they're not losing. Like,
nope.
I mean, people, you may have those critics that, you know, have issues with it, but they're swinging for the fences and hitting home runs with this movie, with No Way Home, right? And like, just content in general is coming out at a constant pace since we're still in the pandemic, but you know, when everything started ramping back up again, as far as movies and shows, like, and I always do this every episode, comparing to what we see over there in live action DC with everything they've got in shambles. Marvel is winning, continuing to win. Dane, I know what you're about to say. You gotta hold it, bro.
Oh, no. you mentioned very specifically live action DC, right?
Yes.
As if you are aware of anything other than live action. Yes.
Here you go, Roy. Dane is alluding to the fact that I've told him I was going to watch the DC animated universe.
It's incredible.
Because, yes, I know.
There's so many good, like, I don't want to, like, come on here and bash you on your own podcast, but, like,
oh, please, so ahead, please do it. Let him have it. Tell this man, he can't, look, I've known this guy since third grade, and he hasn't listened to me about it yet. There have been plenty of times where he's taken advice and even given me advice, and I've taken it. And this is the one piece of advice for over a year that I was like, dude, not even because I want you to watch it, but just because you're missing out on so much good quality. Like,
I watched two. Oh, I watched the, wow. I can't tell you what it was, though. It's the first two.
That's a problem. It's not a problem because you only watch two, but a problem that you don't even remember what you watched.
Yes, I know.
Okay.
I was kind of the same way. Like, it took me a while because, you know, it takes a minute for me to anything non-Pixar Disney to sit down and be like, have a really committed relationship with animated stuff. Like, I don't watch anime at all. Like, I'm terrible about it. But, and like, I'm still struggling to watch What If. But there's so many good just one-off things in the DC canon where it's just a single serving. You don't have to like care about the characters. It's a really cool concept, and we're just going to give you all the cool concepts that you want that we cannot bring to live action for some reason. And they're usually really, really good. You got to like that animation style. They have sort of all similar animation style as they've always had, but like Superman Red Sun and Mask of the Phantasm and
so I've watched Justice League Flashpoint Paradox, and I've watched Justice League War. Those are the two I watched.
Yeah. And I, you know, not to mention also their animated series, like the Harley Quinn series, is one of the funniest things that I've ever sat down and like, wow, it's so funny.
That's on HBO Max, right?
Dope. Yeah.
Okay.
The whole DC catalog is on HBO Max, but like, I will say, like, the animated stuff, it really blows whatever Marvel, that like, it blows What If out of the water, and they have a chokehold on that.
Like, they,
I believe,
I don't know why they can't replicate that in live action. It's so weird, because the same guy, David S. Goyer, and now this has become a DC thing, David S. Goyer is the executive producer for every single one of those DC animated films. Like, why can't we do the same thing? Just do the same stories.
It's like copy and paste. I mean, obviously, you're going to lose some of the creativity when you're going from animated to live action. But people have very important jobs and dedicate their livelihoods to doing just that. Use it. But anyways, I didn't want to get us off to a tangent. Actually, I did.
No, that's exactly what you wanted,
exactly. I love chaos. But to answer part of your question, about just the movie itself. My question, or actually answer your question with a question. How do y'all feel about...
Raise you one.
Yeah. How do y'all feel about the MCU's way of... Are they going to lump together these virgin timelines that we saw from Loki and the different variants, the concept of dimensions and pocket dimensions, and the idea of these different worlds and universes? Like, how are they going to move forward with explaining that those are three separate different concepts to an audience of people who might not care or prioritize that there are differences between the three?
Okay, so you're gonna, like, my podcast hosts will they're gonna have to fight me because I said the same thing on our show is that there's just a lot of homework now that we have to do, and it's starting to feel, and it's not like a fault of Kevin Feige or Marvel, really. It's really kind of a fault of Disney, that Disney is like, we launched this thing, make us content. And, you know, and we love content. I like gobble it up like a little pig. Like, I'm just like, yeah, give me the slop. But like it's starting to feel like almost like homework where you have to, what happened in Loki? Okay. All right. Does this What If series matter? Who cares? And then and people get mad at you, but like, because people have watched all these shows and people know where it's going. Mm-hmm. But we used to get all of this in one single serving movie thing, and you would go to the theater, you'd sit down, you get it, you'd look up on your phone what it was. Now it's like, all right, I got to sit through 7 hours of this next
YouTube videos.
So, yeah. And then I got to go back and watch, like, who is Captain America now? Mm-hmm. And like, is the Winter Soldier still in it? And it just kind of feels like there's so much more. And yeah, we had 11 movies between like the first Avengers and Infinity War. Mm-hmm. But now we're like at 11, we're like at 12 projects in just phase four already. Mm-hmm. And they got mad at me because they were saying, Dex was saying, you just admit that all you care about is like when the X-Men here. And I said, I don't care. Like, I want that'd be cool. But like, that's like not the end all be all. What I care about is kind of like seeing the forest through the trees here, because I said, there's a roadmap, but I don't have a compass at all. Like, I am turning in circles. Is what I said. Like, I see the roadmap. I saw Kang in Loki. I saw, you know, and I saw the timelines. I've seen it all. I'm just saying, if I, a normal fan, who has watched all this content and still like, all right, what's the end goal here? Yep. Is still having that problem? Then obviously it doesn't matter. This movie is going to make $1 billion at the box office, this past movie. And they've announced the Secret Wars movie and all of that stuff. And they've announced the Fantastic Four, and eventually they'll get an X-Men. And so it's all laid out there, but I personally have started being like, I'm getting fatigued. I'm like, I complain about the Marvel fatigue quote that everybody always says, but I'm like, okay, let's strap in for Moon Knight. You know what I mean? That just, I didn't like it, to be honest with you, didn't connect to that at all. Mm-hmm. And it just was one of those things where it's like, now I gotta, let's strap in for She-Hulk, and let's strap in for Miss, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like,
I think,
okay. And
when Dane and I were breaking down Moon Knight, and we haven't even talked about the finale yet, we'll get that next episode, but I used to come in. I've come in every episode, and I'm like, Dane, what did that mean? Like, I'm so confused.
Actually,
and Keith, we might have to get Keith on next time, because he's on our YouTube page. He's explained a lot to me about it. But to go back to the Marvel fatigue, man, yeah, that's kind of the caveat, right? Like, of you connecting everything so much and building your universe over having to watch this movie and property. Mm-hmm. And then when you bring in Disney Plus, where shows are dropping like every 3 months, right? Seems like you got Ms. Marvel coming in June. So April to June is 2 months. So look, it's, yeah. And I think you have, like, for example, to me, it felt like America Chavez, and we haven't really talked about her a lot with this movie. I feel like she was there for plot, but also explaining stuff to the audience as far as what was going on in the movie. Like, she's like, I'm such and such, and I can travel through multiverses. You know, I met this guy. Like, I feel like she was there. I mean, she did a great job, but I feel like she was there as, like, guiding the audience as well as Doctor Strange throughout the movie, is like, as far as stuff that she was like saying and things like that.
Yeah. Spoon feeding.
In this movie, she was a walking plot device.
Yeah, exactly.
To be completely honest with you. And it was cool what they did with her, and just going back to the movie, like, the thing that I think take away from just this movie in general is, like, and I got duped by marketing, I'll say that, is like, when they jumped through the multiverses, and I was talking about bad CGI, when they jumped through the multiverses, that was the coolest thing that I've ever seen. Yeah. And they did it once. And it was just one of those things where it's like, you call this movie The Multiverse of Madness, and it is that, but it's like, we didn't spend that much time in the multiverse. We spent time in three worlds, one that kind of just looks like the other world. You know what I mean? We spent time in the eight three eight. We spent time in the 838 world, which isn't that different from 616. And then with the Superior Strange world or whatever. And that was it, really. Yeah. And there was big set pieces on the mountains and stuff, but it's like, you show us that you can hop through all these multiverses. And obviously with America Chavez, they're going to do that in like Young Avengers and have more of that. But it's like, ooh, this is called The Multiverse of Madness. Show me more multiverses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I kind of left going like, and it's weird to say this in a movie where they just killed superheroes and Wanda is putting up like 45, 10 and 10 and like, no turnovers, no notes, like advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals. And she just puts up incredible numbers. But I still left feeling underwhelmed a little bit, where I'm just like, ooh, there's something there where I needed just a taste more. And people disagree with me, like my own podcast disagrees with me on that. But that's how I feel about man, like, ooh, we were so close to, for me, having an all-time classic. And I think I'll probably go back and like, this will age better with time.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where I was like, ooh, we were so close.
I had a friend of mine, Dane, MJ, Maurice Porter. He, like, right after the movie, he sent me a voice message, and he said the exact same thing that you said, Roy, and about being underwhelmed. He felt like it could have done more. And I think what I told him was just, like, Marvel loves to, like, leave breadcrumbs and, like, expecting the neck or leaving. His other argument was, he felt like, okay, what's next? He felt like he's been spoiled to think about the next thing after immediately watching an incredible movie. Yeah. And Marvel, like, always puts you in that position sometimes. And it's kind of weird to feel like that. Like, you enjoy the movie for what it is, and then you're automatically thinking about what's next. Like, how does this fit? What's coming next? And I think that all goes back to that, you know, that connectivity, looking forward to the next thing.
It was always going to be a problem after having two of the biggest event movies of all time come out.
Like, how do you top that?
How do you top it? And it's not necessarily fair, but this is the road that they've set themselves up on with wanting to, and obviously they're always going to try to continue these movies because it's a $1 trillion franchise, but this is the road that they set themselves up on by saying, we're just going to keep going, and eventually it's going to be even bigger. And then you watch a movie that is really good and self-contained, like The Multiverse of Madness, and you're thinking, well, that wasn't multiversal enough. And maybe fair or not, but that is kind of a criticism. Exactly.
That's the exact.
They spoiled us. They have spoiled us. They spoiled me rotten.
But before we get out of here, the two post credit scenes for this movie, one, which of course I had to look up after Dane. I don't know if you did or not, because I'm not very familiar with the character, but apparently, so what happens after the conclusion of Doctor Strange, where he defeats. And we didn't even talk about that. He goes inside the corpse of the other Strange using the sleep, or is it sleep? Not sleepwalking. Dreamwalking.
And, which I said was like Disney's way of doing like a work from home program.
It really was
like a remote work. You can just be anywhere and remote in.
Yeah. Facts. Yeah. So he defeats, or Wanda really defeats herself because you weren't beating her one on one.
Or did she?
That was another thing with this movie. It was like another thing to be like, just to finally show how, in which I appreciate it, but to finally show how OP that she was.
Yep.
Yeah. And we didn't appreciate that and all the other things. And they finally showed it in this movie, which was really incredible. But it is one of those things at the very end of the movie where you said she defeats herself. She basically like just traps herself. She's like, I gotta do this on my own.
And America Chavez, didn't she say like, I can't beat you, and just put her, you know, punched her into dimension, I believe, with her kids seeing her how she was. But post-credit scene, Doctor Strange, we see the Darkhold has taken hold of him with the last scene as he gets the third eye. Mm-hmm. So he's walking in the street in the post-credit in New York, and we see like a literal she didn't cut it yet, but what's the actor's name? Charlize Theron. She pops up in all purple. Had to look her up. Apparently it's Clea, who is the niece of Dormammu, who we saw in the first Doctor Strange movie. And she literally rips the multiverse up, and you see the dark dimension, and she's saying incursion, which we didn't mention this as well, but incursion was a term used throughout the movie, which I feel like is Marvel learning its audience to be familiar with what that means, which is the multiverses or the universes of different.
That was in Loki, right?
Yes, I think they first introduced it in Loki.
Like diverging from each other or collapsing in and on each other.
Thank you. The universe is collapsing against each other, which leads to probably eventually Secret Wars, Battle World. But Clea comes and says, you know, incursion is happening, need your help unless you're scared. Mm-hmm. He pops open his third eye and says, I'm ready, whatever. That was the first post-credit scene. And the second one was Bruce Campbell after Doctor Strange had put that spell on him earlier for him to keep hitting himself. The spell finally ends. And that was a callback to
Evil Dead.
What movie was that? Evil Dead? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what y'all think about the post-credit scenes? And then we kind of talked about the movie overall, but just give your take
Dane,
on the whole film.
Dane, you probably know more about the character than I even do, but there's a tweet that kind of went viral a long time ago that is I always think about with these post-credit scenes, and this one in particular, where it was like you just had this epic like Sam Raimi-ish battle and funny like sort of weird things going on, and then all of a sudden they just interrupted it to have this MCU thing come in. And there's a tweet that went viral that said dudes will just watch a 3-hour Marvel movie just to sit through the end of the credits and have somebody pop up and go, it's me, Blorpo. and everybody's like, oh, I can't believe it was Blorpo. And that's what that felt like at the end of the movie, where it's like, who is that? You know?
Yep.
And it felt like a completely different thing from what we had just watched for like 2 hours. But yeah, I thought it was cool. I mean, I think that Marvel getting like throwing the bag at literally every popular actor in Hollywood is insane.
Yeah.
So yeah. And we know that Charlize Theron like won't pass up a bag. She'll do anything. But it is funny. Like, she was in like 3 bad Fast and Furious movies, so she'll do anything.
That's right.
But I think it is funny.
Yeah. I'm glad you told me it was 3 bad ones, because I've only seen 1 bad one. I hadn't had the pleasure of seeing the other 2 horrible Fast and the Furious movies, the most recent.
I think she's in the last 2 Fast and Furious movies, and they're not great. Like especially the last one that came out was just not good.
That's good. So you brought up, I've my final thoughts, mutants. Obviously, I've told you, I'm excited about the possibility, or it's going to happen. The incursions, I think if I had to theorize, more than I normally would, the incursion is probably the best way for the mutants to be introduced, or like, we've been living among you this whole time sort of situation. Probably be the best way to do it. Other thought, with that being in some of the comic books, his girlfriend, I'm curious of how this is going to work and just how, I'm curious how that's going to work. I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to go, because they try to push so much for this, not push so much, but they made it a point several times throughout this movie and the first Doctor Strange movie about his relationship with his girlfriend and that. So I don't know how they're going to do that. Maybe some sort of weird love triangle, maybe possible. I don't know. But again, this just goes back to Roy, and you were mentioning this earlier, like, where the hell are we going with this? And a part of it, I like not knowing, but then a part of me is like, what the hell are we doing here? But I guess that's the point for them to get me to come back to the movie theater is they don't know. I don't know. So we have to find out. So,
well, introducing a mega villain like I said, I don't necessarily subscribe to the theory that like you can't do that because millions of people have watched these TV shows,
right?
But more people are going to watch the movies. So introducing a mega villain who ate in Loki, Jonathan Majors, and not having him yet in any of these films, we've had like three films since Loki has come out, and not have him in any of these films is like, what are we fighting towards? You know what I mean? That's my sort of big thing here is like,
are we sure that introducing
him in that was the best choice? Cause he's going to pop up an Ant-Man and people are going to be, who's this dude?
There's like so many like storylines, like usually, well, Marvel's been on this road of one storyline leading up to Thanos, but now you've got the multiverse, right? But then you've got the Skrulls and Secret Invasion, which I forgot about. Like, you know, you see Nick Fury, you know, in space. And I'm sure that'll be addressed in Secret Invasion, which got pushed back to 2023. But it seems like, you know, it's like a map. Royden, you mentioned like the map with no compass. That's kind of like what it is right now. Like, they've got so many different avenues and stuff. And I think I read something about Kevin Feige on a retreat with the Marvel people that they're already planning the next 10 years all the way through like 2032, which is insane to think about. Like, but I think what you mentioned about Jonathan Majors is like, I don't know what show or movie he could pop up in that would make sense up until Ant-Man.
I think it's Ant-Man. I think that's when
they're just going to bring him in there.
Listed in the credits, like that's where he's going to be. But it is one of those things where it's like, is like if he's going to be as major of a villain as we think that he's going to be, it's like, you know, I don't know. I think you're going to catch some people off guard by being like, all right, here's Kang. And who the hell
like
is
who?
Kang?
Normal,
the layman is going to really kind of be, and that's who they make these movies for, by the way. Yeah. They don't make them for
the general audience,
They don't make them for the mega nerd. Nope. Yeah. They don't make them for everybody. They make them, hopefully, so you can go in and be like, all right, I get what's going on.
Right.
That's what they have been doing for a millennia. So, you know, I don't know. I can go on and on and on about it. I think people still watch the properties. I don't think it's as confusing to a bunch of people as I'm making it out to be, but I do think that you have lost some people in the weeds.
Yeah.
You bring up a valid point, because then how you can't just randomly roll out the red carpet for a character this magnitude, like especially without us having a formal introduction of the first family, given that he's like a distant relative to Reed Richards. It's like, what do we do? I don't know.
Well, and it's unfair because it's like they set up Thanos through three movies. Like, nobody knows who Thanos was at the end of the Avengers. Like, nobody knew. Nope. Like, nerds were like, oh, that's Thanos.
Yeah.
And we had, as the general populace, had to get on our iPhone 2s and be like, Thanos, question mark. And yeah, this is awesome. This sounds cool. And it was, and it worked out. But yeah, just to not have him be in a movie, and set him up that way is kind of going to be like, you know, I have faith in Kevin Feige. He hadn't led me astray yet.
Yeah.
I'm always down for more Marvel content.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, for sure.
And make it make sense.
Marvel content is, you know, continuing to get out there. We got Ms. Marvel. I don't know what next month. I don't know how many people are going to be up for that. But after that, you got Thor: Love and Thunder in July. I think the next movie after that is Black Panther, right, in November.
Black Panther. You have She-Hulk in there somewhere.
She-Hulk, yeah. Right.
As they a push, series.
Yeah, Ant-Man is in 2023. They push Secret Invasion to 2023. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where they go.
It also should be noted, and I know we're going long, but it also should be noted that like a lot of this has kind of been thrown off by the pandemic and how they like were supposed to put things in the timeline. So it is like they've had reshoots on Doctor Strange. They've had stuff where it's like, all right, we got to kind of make this fit to what we've determined our new release schedule is going to be. So it is kind of interesting how they're kind of playing fast and loose with how that's supposed to work because of how everything kind of got thrown off by the timeline. Because originally Doctor Strange was supposed to come out before Spider-Man No Way Home.
Right.
And it was supposed to be America Chavez
in Spider-Man
that brings them in. And Sony was like, no. And that just kind of threw them all for a loop. So it is interesting to see how they're kind of like playing by the skin of their teeth with some of this stuff. But
I didn't even know about that far as the America Chavez originally supposed to be in Spider-Man.
It
got scrapped before they filmed the movie, but because they said no and they couldn't fit her in, and Sony was like, we're definitely still just gonna go in November no matter what you say, and they were like, oh god, okay. So,
whatever.
Yeah, so they kind of had to repurpose how Doctor Strange works.
Yeah,
you know, so
yes,
that's why you have Ned, you know, doing this thing, like, and it didn't make sense a little bit, like, well, I think I have a distant relative.
Why is he magic now?
Yeah. So it's like, that part of it makes sense now. It's like,
Well, those are our thoughts on Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Royden, appreciate you hopping on the duo, my guy. Great time as well. Thank you for hopping on.
Appreciate it.
Royden of the One Take Podcast, man. Tell them where they can find y'all's podcasts and socials and all that good stuff.
You can find me, because that's all that matters, right? You can find me at Royden Ogletree. But no, the more important thing that I like to push is that you can find us at One Take Pod. That's the number One Take Pod on Twitter. It's where we do most of our content. We're also on Instagram, and you can find some clips on TikTok. Right now, you're going to find a couple of episodes that we haven't dropped on our feed on our YouTube account, because we're like everything else, we're having technical difficulties with trying to get this stuff up. Yeah, it's terrible, but we're trying to we have a Godfather episode and our Multiverse of Madness episode back ordered on our YouTube account. Most of our podcasts are usually pretty long, so go, and I know you're not working at work, so if you want to listen to three guys yell at each other about movies.
Those guys are hilarious over there, man.
Yes. Tap in. And that's One Take Podcast on YouTube. That's where most all of our episodes are unedited in full now. And we'll get those other two episodes up on our feeds on Spotify, Instagram, Apple, and all of the where you get your podcasts from.
Podcasts.
All your podcast platforms. We will have those two episodes up soon.
Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you. Episode 85 in the books, man. Make sure you check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, Dane. What do YouTube people say?
Man, just make sure you follow, like, and subscribe to get all the exclusive content. And don't give you any type of content until the last 5 seconds of the video.
Not a game. On YouTube, Apple, Spotify, our website, www.theduosportsandstuffpodcast.com. Of course, Royden, I'm going to put the One Take Podcast stuff in the episode description as well. appreciate you for joining us, man.
Appreciate you. No problem. Hey, thanks for having us on. Y'all do great work, and I really appreciate that how you've intersected to y'all's what y'all want to talk about. We're so like one monoculture over at One Take Pod, so I love the intersection of what y'all are doing.
Hey, I've like brought it down to one quote. I don't know if Dan remembers. I call it the one stop shop for jocks and nerds.
Love it. Love it.
One stop shop. But yeah, appreciate you, man. Episode 85 of the duo. We are out this thing. The duo. The duo. The duo. The duo.